fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. J.R. Moore, our third hour here on Friday, the 18th day of December, our last live show this year on Friday. We're going to take off next 2 Fridays and the next 2 Thursdays. How about that here at Republic? I'll be looking forward to some time off myself. All right. Proper tip of the day, pray for our president and his family. Pray for our republic. Hunker down. Maintain your situational awareness. The expanded prepper tip, work on your physical fitness, your aerobic strength, and your anaerobic strength. Very important. Okay, we have patient waiting in the green room, my friend Steve Whitman. Steve is a gentleman who has an unusual story to tell. He's had an unusual life, to say the least. And we'll be talking about the new edition of his book titled Winning Life's Lottery, the updated version. And getting his story. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, John.
Well, sir, are you in Florida or are you in Boston?
No, I'm in sunny Florida, thank God. We just got about 15 inches of snow at the house in Massachusetts, so.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's nice to be down here.
Absolutely. Well, I've been to your home. It's a lovely home, and far better than being in the frozen north. I'm not a big fan of snow myself. I did some winter training with the Army, and it taught me, if I didn't know already, I knew I just soon not have to do that anymore. But
myself, I've camped out many times, and well, my coldest has been 20 below, and I don't want to.
I'm not
do
sure
that
how much different. My coldest was 10 below, and that was enough for me. Anyway, we got two things we're going to be talking about. First of all, this is the second edition of your book titled Winning Life's Lottery, which has expanded and added to it. And then the topic of the book itself, which is why you and I are here, which is your saga, your story of survival, how the angels helped you and You had angelic help all day long. And I think the best thing to do is just begin from the beginning. You're working at your fish camp up there in Maine. You're a certified Maine guide, which is a very difficult certification to get. And you have your fish camp up there. You're doing some construction work, which involves moving some concrete blocks. And just start from there, moving the concrete blocks.
Yeah, we were, my brother and I, we were building a what we call a drop inlet to drainage structure. And it was made out of 12-inch concrete block, and I was in the hole. And he was handing me the blocks from up above. And I was laying them, you know, with mortar and cement and so forth, and making the structure itself. And unfortunately, I did a big no-no. And he handed me a block, and I reached out for it. So the block, my arms were fully extended when I grabbed the block and brought it down to me. And immediately, it was like somebody shoved an ice pick up through my back, my lower back. And I was actually paralyzed in the hole. And I fell backwards, you know, down into the bottom of it. And my brother went, "Oh, my God, what's wrong?" I said, "I can't move." And to make a long story short, he got a ladder for me to climb out of a hole. And he actually pulled me out of the hole, really. My brother's a pretty big guy, and he's pretty strong. And but he got me out of the hole. And from there on, that was in all around July, middle of the summer.
Was that the rest of the, what year was that? Was that 2010? Refresh my memory.
No, it was 2013.
2013.
And,
okay.
Yeah, it was in July, and for the next couple of months, I suffered. I mean, I had trouble even getting into a pickup truck. Guiding was almost impossible. Sitting in the canoe, driving a canoe with an outboard motor on the back, because we have square back canoes that accommodate outboard motors. All through the day, I was constantly rubbing my leg because I had the sciatic nerve problem going down my left leg from my back, and rubbing that and standing up and down, up and down. It was unbearable at times. I tried
everything. At some point, was it your brother who told you that you should go ahead and get an energy cleaner?
No, it was a friend of mine that I've gone to several tactical schools with and whatever, and shot in competition with, that mentioned to me that because we're, you know, him and I both listened to your show, and Chris called me one night, and he asked me how I was doing. I told him horrible and told him the story, and he said, "Well, why don't you just, you know, try an energy cleaner? What else? You don't have anything to lose. You know, why don't you try it?" And so I said, "Well, I was at my wit's end. I couldn't move, so I decided to order one." And about 4 or 5 days later, I got it in the mail. And to be honest, I looked at it, and I said, "My God, it's just a little box." I said, "I don't know if this is going to work or not." And right. My wife says, "Hey, you know, I'll hook it up to the bed." You know, and like she said, like Chris did, what do you have to lose?
Right.
And I said, "Yeah, okay, I'll try it." And to be honest, I had really no faith in it, okay? But I tell you, after 4 or 5 days, I woke up, and I was amazed on the results. And after 2 weeks, I was good to go. I mean, I was, I could jump into a truck, I could do all my work, I could run a chainsaw, chop wood, I mean, split wood with a maul. I just couldn't believe it.
Split wood with a maul, now that's an athletic event.
Yeah, well,
we use log splitters. We use log splitters here. We don't use a handheld maul anymore.
Well, it is exercise for sure, and we use 8-pound mauls. So,
oh yeah,
I mean, and these are not light mauls, and
brutal. That's brutally tough work. Okay, yeah, well, you got back to your full range of mobility and strength, obviously, and so you're living the good life again because of the energy cleaner, and then was it the first of October that the incident happened?
Yeah, camp had closed. My wife had gone back to Massachusetts, and only my brother and I were left. And we were just doing odds and ends that day before we were actually going to leave the following day, October 2nd. He was still splitting some wood, and I decided to take the backhoe with a load of gravel to go out and patch some potholes in the road. We maintain a mile and a half length of gravel road coming into the camp. So I told him after lunch I'd do that and finish up, and that way we could leave the next day. And then while I was out there, that only took me about a half an hour, you know, one bucket full. And I saw my next-door neighbor, said goodbye to him. And then as I was driving back with the machine, I noticed a drainage ditch on the left-hand side of the road that, you know, kind of overflowed during the spring. And I said, I looked at my watch. I had a couple hours left, so I decided to clean it out with the machine. And I was working on that, and that's when I noticed a car up the street from me. He was parked, well, probably about maybe 200 yards from me. And he was just sitting there. And I was trying to figure out who it was. And I couldn't really see through the windshield because the sun was shining on it. It was reflecting off it. And finally, I realized it was an employee of mine that used to work for me up to about a year before that. He had gotten physically sick, and he wasn't able to do the maintenance job anymore. So I was wondering why he was watching me, and actually he went by me a couple of times, back and forth, very slow. And I said, gee, that's really weird. So I had finished, I was off the machine at that time, you know, just cleaning up the final parts of the ditch with a shovel. And he drove by me, going back towards camp, and pulled off the side of the road about 50 yards in front of me. So I didn't know what he wanted. So anyway, I jumped on the machine, and I threw the shovel in the bucket and jumped on the machine and pulled up alongside the car. And I thought maybe he wanted to come back to camp and have coffee with us at 5 o'clock because we used to do that every day.
Right.
And so I looked at my watch. I says, it's 4:45. It's quitting time. And that's when all hell broke loose. All of a sudden, I heard this very loud shot like a bang. And the pain in my right hand, I just looked down. I mean, it was like somebody took a sledgehammer and hit it. And I saw my index finger basically hanging by just maybe a little piece of bone and some tissue. And I said, my God. And I thought he had thrown an M80 into the backhoe. Now, it's an open cab with a roof, so it's,
right,
you know, it's pretty accessible. And I looked down at my hand. I just couldn't believe what had happened. And then I must have turned a little bit, and then I heard another bang. And that's when I felt the pain, the real sharp pain going right through my chest. And then I looked out of the corner of my eye, and I saw him pointing the gun out the window. And I realized he had a .45. And I realized he was trying to kill me.
Of course.
Then I knew there was no two ways around it. I had to get out of there. So I actually threw myself off the machine to the left side, you know, to the opposite side of the car. And as I went, I heard another shot. And that's when I felt a real searing, almost like a burning feeling right through my back to my chest. And that's when I hit the ground face first. And so anyway, immediately, you know, you go into the mode, you know, from being, you know, trained in first aid and everything, you start assessing yourself how bad you are. You know, it's almost like automatic that you do this.
Right.
And my left shoulder, okay, was excruciating pain along with my finger. And I saw the blood pouring out of my chest, my upper right chest. And so I said, oh, boy, I'm in trouble now. And so I couldn't move my left arm. I thought that was broken when I hit the ground. But then I knew I had blood pouring out of my chest. So I looked down, and I took my pinky and my thumb on my right hand, because I couldn't use my index finger at all because it was just hanging, and I squeezed the wounds in my chest, my pectoral muscle in my chest, the best I could. And then I even coughed and spit to see if I had any blood in my saliva, because I didn't know if my lungs were punctured or how bad I was hit inside or what was going on. But then the realization came, where is he?
Right.
And I tell you, that feeling, being helpless, sitting there up against the backhoe front tire, I never want to go through that ever again. And I don't wish it on anybody. So I immediately looked to the rear of the machine, and he wasn't there. And I went to turn my head to the right to look at the upper end of the machine. That's when the fourth shot came. And I really thought he had put another one into me. But he wasn't there. And there was basically nothing after that. Only the machine was idling. So, I mean, I knew I had to get up somehow. But anyway, I crawled over to the rear tire and used the rear tire to prop myself up with my legs, because I couldn't use my arms at all, because I was dropping blood with one and my left was immobile. And as I propped myself up, I looked over the rear tire at the car to see where the hell he was. And he was slouched in the driver's seat, and lo and behold, there was smoke coming out of the top of his head.
Yep,
he had killed himself right there.
Right.
Yeah,
and
his story.
Good riddance.
Yeah.
Well, that began the real saga of survival. So something else happened before at the beginning of the day. This is where your angels were looking out for you. You never put your cell phone in your pocket because you knew it wouldn't work anywhere around your place there. But that morning you did. Tell us about that.
Yeah, when I went in the garage, after I told my brother I was going to go do the potholes, I started the machine. It was a beautiful day that day. It was bright sun. And I kind of looked at the lake. The lake was like a mirror. And I just thought, geez, what a great day, you know, last day at camp. And I pulled up. Well, I started to go up the driveway by my place. And I never take my cell phone with me going out on the road. Number one, there's no reception. And also, with the noise of the machine, I can't hear if anybody calls me anyway. So, but for some unknown reason, I don't know why, but going by my place, I thought, well, maybe Lynn will try and get a hold of me, my wife. You know, and she knew I'd be busy anyway, but for some reason, I jumped off the machine, went inside my camp, and got my cell phone. And to this day, I still wonder about that because I never ever did that before, but
right.
That day I did.
Right. If you hadn't done that, you and I may not be talking right now.
That's a very good possibility because I was in deep trouble. There's no question about it. I had, you know, three slugs with me, and I was bleeding profusely right out through the chest, and of course my finger was hanging off, and I had no arms. I had no use of any of my arms at all. And that meant getting back, and I knew I had no cell phone coverage where I was. That meant either walking out of there, which was impossible. There was no way I could walk any distance at all. I was losing too much blood. So I knew I had to get back on the machine. Now, getting on a backhoe is difficult to begin with. You know, you kind of have to snake yourself around controls and the steering wheel and,
right,
and
right.
Everything else. And I had to get up on that machine with just using my legs. And first attempt was futile, as they say, because I get up on the running board and I fell backwards right into the ditch again.
Hmm.
And so then I don't know, I guess your adrenaline kicks in and you say, you're going to do it this time. And,
right. You had no choice. It was life or death. Get on that backhoe.
Right.
Here's our break. We'll be right back after the break. Stay tuned, everyone.
There are thousands of Broadcasting Network, late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the red pill.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
I wish I was in the land of cotton wool, and there I'm not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixie's land where I was born in early on one frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. And I wish I was in Dixie, hooray, hooray. In Dixie's land I'll take my stand and live and die in Dixie. Away, away, away down south.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. J.R. Moore here on Friday, the 18th of December, visiting with Steve Whitman, the author of the book titled Winning Life's Lottery. And a number of this is a true story. He's also become a prolific author of a number of well-written novels, all of which are for sale at Amazon.com. So you're shot three times with a 45 pistol, twice through the chest, and once taking off your right index finger, almost taking it off completely. And you've got about 1 mile to travel. Was it a mile to get to where you get a cell phone service, driving a backhoe with using your elbow to steer it with? Is that accurate?
Yeah, John. I knew there was only maybe two places on that whole road that I could get cell phone coverage, and one of them was about a mile away. And I knew I had to drive there, and when I got on the machine, I had to drive it with my left elbow. Thank God the machine was still running, because there's no way I could turn the key to get it going, because I had no arms, essentially any use of them anyway.
Right.
So that was quite a chore, driving a backhoe with your left elbow, because I went from one side of the road to the other, and I almost hit some trees on a telephone pole, and I mean, it's all in the book, but I eventually got to the top of the hill where I had cell phone coverage.
Okay, so you get the cell phone out of your pocket. What happened next?
Yeah, basically I had speed dial, so which was good, and I hit that right away for 911 with my pinky, and she answered. I said, "Hey, I've been shot," and the call dropped. And at that time, I don't know, and I still don't know to this day, if that caused it or whatever, or if I was just running out of gas, so to speak. But I knew the cold, clammy feeling started to come over me, you know, typical signs of shock.
Right.
And I knew I was going to pass out. And if I passed out there, I was a dead man.
Right.
I was out in the middle of the woods, and nobody would come by. So that meant getting off the machine to treat myself for shock before I passed out. So I stepped off the machine, fell flat on my face because my legs gave out, and I crawled over to a drainage ditch and propped my feet up on the bank and to treat myself for shock. And naturally, I started to come back around, and that meant I could hit the phone some more. And it took me like 5-6 tries to finally get the troops to come, and I got in contact with the 911 emergency people.
All right. So the troops are on the way, and something unexpected happened next. What was that?
Well, you know, people often ask me, you know, what did you think about? Well, I mean, laying in a ditch with 3 bullets in you, you do think a lot. There's no question about it. And I could feel myself actually going. I don't know, maybe accepting the fact that, you know, today was a day and there's nothing I could do about it. I did the best I could. But then, you know, the will to live is strong. It's strong in everybody. And I stress this in the book, that basically I was laying there. I can remember it like it was yesterday. I sat up. And I just said, no, not today. I am not going to die today, not like this. And then all of a sudden I heard a vehicle. And I looked, and believe it or not, 4 bear hunters coming down in a pickup truck stopped. And immediately, you know, of course I'm covered in blood and everything else. And they said, you know, what happened to you? I said, I've been shot. Shot? And by who? I said, by a guy down there. I think he killed himself. Those guys, they jumped out of the truck. Now, they had lever actions, 30-30s, and one guy had a 35 Remington, I think. They started throwing shells in their gun. And I watched them, you know, throw them into the chamber. And, I mean, you know, with a cocking handle, cock the gun.
Right, that's reasonable given the circumstances, yeah.
Yeah, and one guy said, don't worry, bud, he'll never get up that hill. Okay. And so they made a semicircle around me, you know, and I tell you, that was the best feeling, you know, just see somebody, number one, and to have them do that for me. But most importantly, though, they had a stack of paper towels in the truck, and they started stuffing my holes with paper towels. And one of them said, hey, you know you're leaking out the back, too? And, of course, I didn't know this.
Right.
Okay. You know, I couldn't see it, naturally. And I said, I am? He says, yeah, and you're leaking good, too. And believe it or not, of course, I had the entrance hole in my back. When I had leaped off the machine, that's where I got hit.
Right.
And so he stuffed that with a paper towel as well.
Amazing. We'll continue after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen, visiting with Steve Whitman, the author of the book titled Winning Life's Lottery, the subtitle, An Inspirational True Story of Friendship, Jealousy, Betrayal, and Survival. Available for sale at Amazon.com with the rest of Steve's books. Okay, Steve, so you got paper towels stuck in you. The troops are on the way. They were going to send a air ambulance, but what happened there and what happened next?
Well, it took a while for the medics to get to me. It's explained more in the book, but... They didn't get to me till about an hour afterwards. And when they finally did, they were going to life flight me to Bangor. But what happened was there was a major car accident on Route 9. There were fatalities and everything else. And they had stabilized me, and they asked me, do you mind if we send the copter there instead of, you know, to the field? There's a field... Right next to our camp up the street that they were going to land the helicopter right there and get me. But so I said, no, that's fine. And so they decided to take me to the local hospital, which is about 20 miles from my camp, very near to where we had the earthquake the other day.
Right, right, the 3.0 earthquake. Well, let's leave that alone for the time being. So that was a rough road, and, of course, they have a stiff suspension on these ambulances. You felt like you were in some kind of a coal cart, didn't you?
Well, you know, I've never been in an ambulance before. In fact, I had never even been in a hospital before this happened. And going down that road, it's not our road, but another gravel road. My God, it was like riding in a buckboard.
Right.
And I wondered why, okay, when they were putting me into it, they actually tied me down, okay? And I wondered why they were strapping me in like that. I mean, taking really extra care. And, well, I found out why, because,
right,
my God, those things thrashed back and forth.
Right. Okay, so you get to the first hospital, and they get you stabilized. The whole plan there is to get you stabilized to get to the next level of care where there's more expertise, correct?
Yeah, surprisingly, at the local hospital, they weren't equipped to take bullets out of people or that sort of thing. And so they, after doing a lot of x-raying, and of course the state police were there, and they wanted to ask me questions, and, you know, and I had a whole field of people. I mean, 3-4 doctors, you know, 5 or 6 nurses. I mean, it was quite the show, actually.
I bet.
And they, you know, after doing CAT scans and whatever, and that was amazing, because they actually showed me then, well, they told me how one of the bullets had traveled, you know, across my chest, missing my heart by 1/2 inch. And it's a good thing it was ball ammo too, because if it was, you know, hollow points, well, I wouldn't be talking to you now, John.
Right. That would have shattered and gone all different directions. I assume that they did some kind of blood expander or transfusion, one or the other.
Yeah, I was basic saline solution. Surprisingly, they did not give me any blood. Okay, and my mentor who sped from a town which is about 30 miles north of us to the hospital, he was going, as he said, over 100 through the center of town to get to the hospital. But he said when they took me off the gurney onto the table in the emergency room, the amount of blood that was on the gurney was like 2 feet in diameter and about 1 inch thick.
Good God.
And when he saw that, he didn't know if I was going to make it or not. And, of course, he smiled and held my hand, you know, and gave me, you know, kind of comforted me and whatever.
Right.
Through a very tough time. But
Well, you're stabilized, and you're being prepared to be transported to Bangor. And out of all these healthcare professionals, one of them was appointed a spokesperson to say something to you as you were leaving. What? Tell us about that.
Yeah, this was kind of put more light on the subject. But when just before I was put back on the gurney to go back into the ambulance, that was about 4 hours after I got to the hospital. One of the doctors, in fact, they all came into the room. There was like, I don't know, a dozen people in there. And one of the doctors stepped forward and he says, before you go, he says, I've been elected to speak for the group. And I said, really? And he says, yeah. He says, we all want to give you some money. And I said, money? Money for what? And he says, well, we want you to buy us a lottery ticket. And that's when he explained that I was 1 in a million.
Right. You know,
to live through it. But anyway, they put me into the ambulance, and then it was a 2-hour ride. At about that was around midnight.
Was that a hot run? Lights and siren?
They had the lights going. Route 9 is a pretty good road, but it's a very, very winding road, and there's some bumps in it. And again, that was a rough ride. And of course, they had 2 guys in the back with me, with the guy driving, and they had the machines on me, you know, and they had the bottles hooked to me, and
right,
you know, that they're swaying back and forth, and it was quite a ride.
So you get to the second hospital, and how long did you receive treatment there?
I got there about 1:30 in the morning. Surprisingly, the state police had called my wife back in Massachusetts and told them basically I was going to the hospital and what had happened. So she got back in the car and drove up from Massachusetts, and that's about a five and a half hour run to Bangor.
Right.
And she actually got there just when the ambulance got pulled into the hospital. And so we both went in together, me on the gurney and her following, into the emergency room. And that's where they took the, come to find out, the reason why I couldn't move my left arm is I had a slug lodged into my left shoulder, and that had to come out.
Right.
And that's what they took that out there. And that didn't go
well. So it began at 1:30 in the morning, and how long did that process go on?
I was in there for about an hour and a half, and that, as I explain in the book, that didn't go very well. I was never put out or never given any lidocaine or anything like that. In fact, you and I even, you know, talked about that. They didn't even give me a leather strap to chew on.
Right.
You know,
right.
When they dug the bullet out, and that took 20 minutes. Unfortunately, he had trouble.
Well, let's back up a bit. You had not received any pain meds the entire process up to this point.
None at all. Nothing.
No.
Not at all. No. And even when they started cutting me and trying to get the bullet out with forceps and everything, and unfortunately the bullet got pushed in deeper and they had to go in deeper, and of course the blood's pouring out of my arm. My wife passes out in the emergency room. And I mean, in the book, that, you know, it's better explained, but it, like I said, it didn't go well at all. And
understood.
In fact,
you survived it, obviously, and they bring you back to a room. And at some point, a surgeon came in to look at your hand. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was another issue. When I got to the first hospital, they wrapped my hand in gauze and bandages and whatever. They never did anything to it. They said that'd be taken care of later. Well, that next morning, the hand surgeon was supposed to come in to look at it. Well, they never did. And it went till the following night, okay, until they finally got a hold of somebody, and she came in into my hospital room. And she says, I'm here to, you know, take care of your hand. And she looked at it. She says, okay, and she started to unwrap the bandages. Well, what had happened was the blood had soaked through the bandages naturally. It had dried and caked, and she couldn't get them off, so she had to soak them off.
Right.
And right away, you know, I could see the concern in her face. She said, are these clean bandages? Have they been replaced? I said, no, those are the original ones.
The paramedics put on in the ambulance.
Right.
Right.
And she said, nobody's looked at this? I go, no. And she kind of rolled her eyes. And so anyway, when she finally got the bandages off, I could see her almost gasp, okay? And I looked down, and my forefinger, okay, was basically black. It was black as soot. And it was about at least twice, maybe almost three times the normal size. I mean, it was incredible how much I had swollen.
Right.
And she says, this was never cleaned. And of course, my hands were all grease. I had been working on the backhoe.
Okay? Right.
And she says, nobody washed this? I go, no. She says, oh, boy. And I looked at that, and I said, well, that's never going to heal. I told her, well, you must have cut that off now. I said, that's useless. And she looked at it, and she says, well, she says, I might be able to do something with it. Do you mind if I try? And I go, well, no. I says, worse is, later on it'll have to be cut off, but if you want to try and do something. So she operated. Well, she said, I'll be right back.
Right there in the room.
She said, I'll be right back. And she came back with a whole arm full of stuff. And she operated right on me in the room. Okay? And, of course, my wife, curious, you know, because she wanted to be a veterinarian, you know, looked on, and as she, you know, took the pieces of bone out of it, out of the tissue, and clipped some of the nerve endings and some of the tendons that were basically blown. They were no good at all. And she told me that there were three pieces of bone that she'd have to realign and put back together, push back together, and sew me up, and she says, we'll see what happens with it. And then she cleaned it up and wrapped it up. So at that time, I gave it zero chance of ever being able to use it.
Amazing. Well, you got through the surgery. You went home. Of course, you got the energy cleaner pad at home. And then you came back for a checkup. How long did you come back after to the hospital?
That was when I got home. I had to go back to her about 10 days. No, it was about a week later.
Seven days. Okay.
Yeah, about 7-8 days.
You show up, and she asks you to take her shirt off. What happened next?
Well, like when I went home initially and took my shirt off, my wife almost had a burst. I mean, she almost went crazy. She said, "You got to look at yourself." So right away, I was worried. So I went and looked at myself in the mirror, and I then saw the true effect of bullets into the human body.
Right.
I mean, I had every color imaginable, yellow, right, purple, across my whole chest, my whole torso.
Yep.
So, anyway, that's how I looked when I saw this woman in the hospital, the hand doctor. So when I went to see her, at the same time, after she looked at my hand, she said, do you want me to check your bullet wounds? You know, I said, sure. So she had me take my shirt off, and she went, oh, my God, just like that. And I go, what's wrong? You know, of course, you know, when a doctor says, oh, my God, you go, you know, what's going on? And she says, I said, what's wrong? She says, your trauma. What happened to your trauma? I said, what are you talking about? She says, the discoloration. It's almost all gone. She says, nobody heals this fast.
Right.
You know, and she told her nurse, go down and get so-and-so. And she says, I want them to see this.
Well, I need witnesses.
Two, three other nurses came in, and right away she starts explaining. She said, when I saw this man a week ago, his torso, and she had, of course, the medical terms, which, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I knew what she was talking about, as far as the trauma and everything. And she said, look at him. Look at him now. There's nothing. It's almost 90% of it's gone, She said, I can't understand this, And then they were all amazed. They were just totally taken back that I had healed that quick.
7 days on the energy cleaner.
Yep.
Now, there's a bonus to all this, and that's your lovely wife, who I got to meet both of you finally last February down at your home in Florida. She had been an aerobics instructor, and she was contracted lupus and had to give up what she loved, which was being an aerobics instructor. What happened with Lynn and the energy cleaner?
Well, Lynn came down with lupus in about 2000, And she, like you said, she had to give up, teaching and whatever. It was something that she really loved because she had to go on the medication, which is the hydroxychloroquine, which we've all heard so much about.
Right. Okay.
And that causes, it can cause blindness in people if they're on it long enough.
Take it too long, right.
Right. And, but anyway, she was taking that, and she had to have her eyes monitored. She had to have her blood monitored constantly, and they adjusted the medication. Well, naturally, when we had the energy cleaner on our bed, she was sleeping on it too. So she goes back to the doctor about 3-4 months after I was shot. And the doctor said, we got your blood test back. Something's going on here. And she said, what's the matter? She says, lupus. We don't see it. And she says, you don't? And they said, no, it looks good. You know, I think we can decrease the medication. And so she said, okay. So they decreased it by half. And every 3 months, she was going back to have a blood test. And sure enough, after 6 months, it was totally gone. There was no signs at all of lupus. They took her off.
Couldn't tell she ever had it.
Nope. And to this day, she is not on the medication. And in fact, John, it was about a month ago, she had a complete blood work done, and there is no signs of lupus.
Fantastic. Praise the Lord. We got our last break. We'll be right back.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer, it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer, Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer, excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us, therefore, brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Visiting with Steve Whitman, the author of Winning Life's Lottery, the new expanded edition, which has even more details in it. Well, Steve, it's been quite a saga. I encourage you to write an article initially about what happened. That article, which is published at Tim Spencer's website, has become a book, which has now become... How many books have you written, sir? I've lost track. Steve? Hello, Steve.
Yes. Hello.
How many books have you written now?
I'm on my 10th one.
And that's still yet to be published. How are you close to getting it finished?
No, it'll probably be a spring release.
Okay.
It's a futuristic book set in 2046.
Okay. All right. Well, we're looking forward to that. Well, I like to get you on the air here about twice a year to tell your story, because we always have new listeners, and it's a very heartwarming story. It needs to be a movie, quite frankly. Your story needs to be a movie, and should be a movie. I've seen a lot of films that had a plot that was not nearly as heartwarming as this one is. My goodness. What words you want to leave our listeners with, especially for our engine cleaner procrastinator, Steve?
Well, you know, I've given you, you know, credit for actually, you know, saving my life, John. The main thing why the energy cleaner saved my life was it healed my back, okay? And that day in the backhoe, if I was in the same condition with a bad back, there would have been no way I could have gotten out of that seat and thrown myself out of the cab. The fellow who shot me, I hunted for years with him, okay? He was a good shot, both with a rifle and a pistol. And if I had sat there for the third shot without, you know, throwing myself out, there's no doubt in my mind he would have put one right in the center of my torso. So that movement and that reason with my back being good and being able to throw myself off the machine has saved my life. There's no doubt about it. And that's one
thing.
Well,
sir, that's heartwarming. It's very humbling experience for myself and Tom Berryhill, the manufacturer. A dramatic, off-the-charts crazy story. It had an optimal outcome. And I'm so glad that we had that outcome, and you continue to live your life. I refer to you as a civilized Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
And that's a compliment. That's a compliment. And I'm so glad we had that outcome. Steve, well, thank you, sir. I want to wish you and your family a wonderful Christmas and New Year's, and I hope we'll talk privately sometime soon, sir.
Yes, and you too, John.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
That's it for the day. That's it for the week. Get the medical supplies, your energy cleaner, your everything now while you can. Never, ever give up your guns. Please have a fun, safe, productive day. And God bless America.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.